Welcome to the Analytics of Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara. We are diving into the New Orleans Saints. And I just, the number one note on the top of my note page for the Saints, transition. You're transitioning away from Breeze. You're in the post-Breeze world. Now you're in the post-Sean Payton world. New head coach. They promoted to Dennis Allen, who at a point was a Raiders coach. Really good defensive coordinator with the Saints, becomes the head coach. Pete Carmichael now becomes the play caller full-time. There's a bit of uncertainty about his role. Like, it's kind of clouded in secrecy. I don't know. It's unclear, I guess, entirely how much play calling he's done. It's clear that he's done play calling. He play called. There was a point where Sean Payton missed time with, like, I think he tore an ACL or, like, broke a leg or something and, like, freak sideline injury thing. And he was up in the booth for, like, several weeks. And Carmichael called the plays around then. There was some uncertainty when that stopped. There was the point where Sean Payton missed the year because of the Bounty Gate suspension, and Carmichael called the plays then. There was some stuff around COVID. So he has called plays, probably like a couple of seasons worth of plays for them in his tenure. He's been there a while. One of the longest serving offensive coordinators in the league that's not a, well, just in general, and especially one that's not a, head coach right now. So probably in good hands. And I think it'll be interesting to see, you know, there was some talk, there's been some veterans, some retired people as well. I've said basically, you know, he was part of this, right? He was basically in on all the meetings, heavy input and all that stuff, worked with Breeze, worked with Payton and doing all that stuff. You know, you could have an offensive coordinator who's really not coordinating the offense when the head coach is the play caller. And then you can have a coordinator who is really coordinating the offense. It's not just a name. It really feels like that. Like he was really in there and part of the development of what has been the Saints offense, and a pretty good offense for the past, you know, for the era that he's been there. So I think they're probably in good hands would be what I would say with the offense. I think there's a couple of things we'll get to. Kamara specifically, I'm pretty interested in how they handle that. There was a big transition from last year to this year in terms of, or from 2 years ago really to this past year. They went really run heavy. So I'm super interested to see what this phase of this offense looks like. Because I think, you know, with Jameis, how much do they trust Jameis? You know, how much of that was them being really run heavy last year was concerned about Jameis? How much of it is just a strategic shift, you know, personnel wise, right? They were without Michael Thomas. They really have great answers at tight end or receiver, and they went really run heavy. You know, is it the lack of trust in Jameis? Is it the lack of trust in the receiving core? Is it, hey, we're just going to give our best player the ball a lot, and that's the way we're going to do it, right? There's, I think, a lot of questions around that. Again, transition, lots of transition going on. So they traded up for Chris Olave. They selected him 11th overall. They actually drafted Trevor Penning as well, an offensive tackle. They gave a first in 2023. I think this could be something that we talk about over the next year. They have Sean Payton technically under contract, and if Sean Payton desires to go somewhere else, they could actually get trade compensation for him. So I always wondered if that trading that first next year was like, hey, if, you know, they kind of view that they actually have more draft compensation in their pocket. And I don't know if there's like a wink, wink, nod, nod there with Sean Payton wanting to come back or something like that. But I kind of wonder when they did that, like if they didn't view that they were going to be able to replenish some of that draft capital with the Payton contract status. So that's just something I could be galaxy branding this, but that's just something I'd keep in mind here over the next, we'll call it year, 6 months to year, right? This would probably be something that really pops up in like January, February next year, pre-draft. Okay, free agents actually added Tyrann Mathieu and Daniel Sorensen. They basically took on the safety core for the Chiefs. Sorensen's like one of the worst safeties. He was just getting doused last year at the beginning of the year. It was a lot of the problems that they had with their defense. And then like the solution was basically don't play Daniel Sorensen as much. So we'll see what role he has with the Saints. Added Jarvis Landry, I think, is a savvy addition. They lost Tyrann Mathieu, Teron Armstead, which does make a difference there at left tackle. So we'll see how, you know, they added Penning, they got Ramczyk and stuff. So they've got, I think, answers on the offensive line, getting younger, replenishing. They brought back Jameis Winston on a 2-year deal. It's a 1-year deal with basically a team option for a second. I'll say a couple things about this. There's no guarantee for Jameis Winston in 2023. I don't know how they compete with Jameis Winston in 2023. I don't know how they draft someone without a first-round pick. I don't know how they trade up for someone without a first-round pick. I don't know how they trade for someone without a first-round pick. You could maybe view it in the light of, you know, they put together a deal, something along the lines of what the Rams did with Matthew Stafford. Maybe that's like a couple of future first would be something that they would think about doing. But as I sit here right now, I kind of look at this Jameis Winston deal of being like, hey, this is kind of, honestly, it's kind of cheap. And listen, if you can do this, right, if you can kind of go in the, and the low teens on a quarterback, you could save $20+ million a year. And he's probably going to have some surplus value in that contract. Like, it's a really intriguing way to go. Again, is it a long-term answer? I'm not sure. But is it an answer over the next couple of years that we can sort of exploit for dynasty purposes? It might be. So that's really the thing. Like, you think about, it's like the difference between a guy like Jameis Winston, for example, and you just think of some of the other implications of it where you can afford situations like Jarvis Landry, right? When you have Jameis Winston not on a huge deal. And, you know, that's the thing with them that they're really smart cap wise, but he's only drawing this year a $4 million cap number. Next year it'd be 15 again. So we'll see there. There's probably an extension there. If he's good this year is probably the number, but again, 11 of that's dead. So there isn't even a ton of ways to like save that money. Like they could save him and they could cut him and save $4.4 million. Maybe it's an extend off of that type of deal. Maybe they have a Bobby Portis wink, wink, nod, nod type deal for looking at other sports. I'm not sure, right? But all of that points to me as saying like this is a really tough, there's a lot here to like in terms of what they have with Winston on the number that they have him at. And even next year, $15.6 million is pretty reasonable. And so, I mean, it allows you to do other stuff at the position, which I think is really interesting. So so we'll see there. And again, they're leveraged up to the hilt in terms of what they're, in terms of their contract stuff. So paying $4 million this year for a quarterback allows them to sort of do all that other stuff. So that's kind of the benefit of it. Again, Winston, we'll see here over the next year. But again, with what they're trying to do with their team build, Winston on the deals that he is makes a lot of sense. So we'll see there. They also signed Andy Dalton and as insurance policy. Again, a good backup quarterback. This team thinks they can win. And whether you or I think that that's the most logical thing, they think they're in it. And, you know, having this team-friendly contract at quarterback, having a good backup quarterback, that's kind of evidence of that. So we'll see here how this team goes. But again, I think they're going to be interesting to watch. And, you know, that's why I think like they'll get Olave involved because they kind of need him. Like they think they're going to win. And so we'll see how that goes. All right. Plays per game. We'll get into the summary stuff, some more analytics instead of just narrative stuff here. 64.8 plays per game last year. That was good for sixth. Dropbacks per game, 34.2. That's 28th in the league. 30.6 design rushes per game. That is first. Designed pass rate just below 50% at 49.9, lowest in the league. They were pretty slow in terms of seconds per play at 28.9. That's good for 25th. The passing game, a little bit, I would consider this a pretty evenly dispersed passing game. 25th behind the line of scrimmage, 26th in the short game, 20th in the medium, 10th in the deep passing game. Again, that's a couple percentage points here and there that they kind of shift around. It's pretty close. Like, that's as pretty neutral as you're going to get, really, in terms of all that stuff. So pretty balanced there. Only 6.8 yards per attempt passing. That was 21st in the league. Again, it was better when Jameis was at quarterback. 5.8% touchdown rate. That's good for 7th in the league. Again, Jameis had basically a 9% touchdown rate last year, so really good there. I'm pretty low volume, so he was able to overproduce that. 24.6% of dropbacks were play action, and there was a 38.7% improvement on play action versus non-play action. That is the 7th biggest split. So again, I think that there's probably room for more play action, and we'll see here going forward. I think probably having Jameis back allows them to maybe do a little bit more of actually what they want to do instead of Ian Book. They started 4 different quarterbacks last year, including Trevor Siemian, including Taysom Hill, Ian Book on like short notice. So I think that they could get back to a better situation for themselves here this year. Some of the production stuff in terms of the offensive outlays, 18th in terms of running back routes per drop back, but actually 8th in terms of running back targets per drop back. So when you have Kamara, we'll get into some Kamara stuff in a minute here. When you have Kamara, it can be excellent. 25th in terms of wide receiver routes per drop back, 26th in terms of wide receiver targets per drop back. Again, not having Michael Thomas hurts. Availability matters, and you kind of see it with this team. 24th in terms of tight end routes per drop back, 27th in terms of targets per drop back. They ran 135 red zone plays. That's 21st. 49% of their plays in the red zone were rushes. That was 18th. So that's a pretty neutral in terms of what they did for their entire offense, which I found was pretty interesting. 2/3 of the red zone carries were to the running backs. That's good for 26th. Again, Taysom Hill, a big factor in that. So that can be a capper on some of the Kamara ceiling stuff, which gives you a little bit of pause. He was so excellent for a while in the red zone, but a lot of that was Breeze. Would they have Taysom Hill and use him in that running game and sort of that gadget area? That can cap Kamara a bit, although we'll get there in a second. Again, I think he has plenty of ceiling. 22nd in terms of passing grade for the O-line, 24th in terms of rushing grade for the O-line. So we'll see what the change there with Teron Armstead is. Jameis Winston, 23 attempts per game, 8.7% touchdown rate, expected for 13.7 points per game. That's just the basic default PFF scoring, and good for 20.2 actual points per game. So way over expectation. Again, touchdown rate will do that for you. Trevor Siemian, I think notably significantly higher in terms of expected points per game than Jameis Winston, 18.2. He was actually an 18-point-per-game scorer last year. I find that interesting. Again, he threw the ball a half dozen more times per game than Winston did. I find that really interesting. And I just wonder if they were trying to find a balance, and they just came to that was the balance with Winston, so we'll be watching that, because I'm really interested to see what they think of Winston. 23 attempts per game is an awfully small number, and we'll have to. I think that's one of the things I want to watch for as they go along early in the season. Really think about passing rate, some of that early down passing stuff with Winston. See where they're at relative to the rest of the position. That's a big time watch early in the season. All right, the Kamara stuff. He's just profoundly elite. So expected points per game last year, 3rd at 20 expected points per game. He scored 18.1 points per game. That was good for running back 6. His usage is still elite. 24% of his routes he was targeted on. That's good for 80th percentile. In his career, he has been targeted on 28.8% of his routes. That is the 100th percentile. That is the top number. Again, you think McCaffrey's elite? Like, Kamara is beyond McCaffrey in terms of eliteness, in terms of his career numbers. 1.62 yards per route run last year. In his career, 2.06. With guys over 200 routes in his career, the 100th percentile outcome. His last year expected yards per route run was 1.36, so he smashed it, went way over. Basically, a quarter of a yard per route over expectation last year, so just excellent. Points per route run in his career, 0.52. McCaffrey, by way of reference, 0.44. So when you think about Kamara, it is an explosive high upside scenario with him. If this offense breaks right in his favor, could really be, I think, something that could really get some ceiling for him. He's underpriced, and I think people are baking in some risk here for this stuff about his suspension stuff. And I'll be honest, I talked about this on a show with Drew Davenport recently. I'll say this. I prosecuted cases involving bar fights. I'll call what happened with him a bar fight. Basically, he got in a fight in a casino. It was like way too late. Bar fight cases, those types of cases, are horrible cases to prove. There's always more to it. There's always, people usually just don't get beat up for no reason by professional athletes, right? Like, the Mike Tyson example on a plane is a good example of this, right? Like, Mike Tyson just doesn't randomly start punching somebody, maybe in his younger days, but no, he doesn't, right? Kamara isn't one that we know to be in a lot of off-field problems, right? When he starts punching someone, you there's probably a reason for it. And I would just sort of be careful to draw massive conclusions that he's going to be suspended for 6 games. And one of the reasons I would say that is I think you, when you see these tweets or whatever, he's bracing for a 6-game suspension. Yes. However, there's mitigating circumstances in there, right? Technically it does fall in the 6-game suspension bucket, right? The trigger for a 6-game suspension. But let's be careful before we assume that. And it could be a 2023 issue, right? If his attorney's any good and it's Kamara, he's going to have a good attorney. This is a 2023 issue. These cases don't get better with age, right? And like, a drunk guy gets beat up and it's not a great circumstance and it's in a casino. Witness cooperation can be a big problem there. So again, and as these things go along with more time, they don't get better for the prosecution, for the people trying to prove that this happened. So just as an FYI, I think I'd be surprised if he misses time this year, and I think he's probably undervalued because of that. All right, so that's Kamara. I think he's still got really high upside. I think he's probably a value where he's at. If you're a contending team and you want to add a running back upgrade, like, he's a place I think he could absolutely address the position. Michael Thomas, some interesting stuff here. 2.47 yards per route run in his career, 99th percentile. That's like Julio Jones, Justin Jefferson, and Michael Thomas. Like, that's sort of the range where you're at. Again, I think I'll default to the, this is the Ryan Russillo, Anthony Davis rule. Once I've seen that you're elite, like, I have a really hard time sort of putting that back. And that's with Michael Thomas. I think it's really interesting with his cost. If things can work well where he actually gets healthy, right? We know that he's an elite player. We know what's on his resume. And I think that he could really return to that. It's purely a question of health, right? You bet on that profile, especially when it's at a discount. It's kind of where I'm at on him. So I'm probably going to add him a little bit here in the offseason as well, probably before training camp starts, while there's still some uncertainty. Adding at a discount, though, right? I'm not taking on someone's problem for full price, for example. So, and I'll just give you some you know, some ideas on some trade stuff for him. With Kamara just searching with Michael Thomas here searching the draft database or the trade database here over at the website. We have Michael Thomas. I'm just pulling it up. I didn't have it up, but now I'm pulling it up now that I'm mentioning it. Future second. I think he could probably do better than that. Skyborn, Michael Thomas for Zeke. I don't love that. 207 this year, I think, is interesting. That's a good one. He hasn't been traded a ton. I just say that. Michael Gallup in a second for Michael Thomas in a third next year. I think if a guy in that deal is going to make a big difference, it's going to be Michael Thomas. He's basically a kick in the getting Watson side. So it's him and Pierre Strong and Michael Thomas for Tannehill, Dobbins, DK Metcalf, and a future third. Again, that's pretty cheap for him, right? You look at him, like, here's some other stuff around where he's just really cheap. He hasn't been traded a lot, though, right? He hasn't really been traded a lot. So that gives me, he's cheap in the bigger deals and going for, a second in existing deals, if that makes sense, right? He's cheap in more one-on-one type deals. That's kind of his valuation. But not traded much. I mean, a handful of trades in June. That strikes me as a player that people are sort of holding on or not willing to give a full-on second. I would use him as an opportunity, in training camp. If you start getting buzz on a guy like Justin Ross, for example, I'd make a Justin Ross for Michael Thomas type pivot, right? That would sort of be – that's sort of the angle, I think, that you play. And I would strike early if he's not – right? Because the way to – on that deal is you don't lose that deal that frequently, right? Justin Ross really has to beat you for you to lose that deal. So you're on all the upside there. So that would sort of be the way that I would think about a deal like that. Skymore and Thomas for Zeke Elliott. I like Zeke Elliott. It feels like it's trading low. Again, you're trading for wide receivers. It's just not typically a trade that we're going to make a ton of in terms of that contract. But that, again, that does feel cheap if you were to sort of put James Cook instead of Sky Moore, right? If you were to change the calculus on the running back there, you'd be like, oh, wait, all right, that construct doesn't seem like it's that far away in terms of the running back versus Zeke. And then you get Thomas from a market value perspective. That actually seems like a discount for Michael Thomas. We're just not super inclined to make that deal because we're not trading Zeke for two wide receivers of that vein. So be that as it may, that's sort of where my thoughts would be on Michael Thomas. I am in the, it's okay to whiff on him as long as you're not giving a big time asset. Right? And I think as long as you're giving sort of a risky asset away and not tying up any sort of future liquidity would sort of be how I would think about him, right? You can speculate, but don't speculate with future capital. All right, so some stuff here. And again, I think that there's probably some value across the board. So Winston, quarterback 24 in terms of real draft position. He's 19th in terms of underdog. Kamara is 14th at both. One of those is probably wrong. I am of the mind that he's undervalued by the redraft market. That would be my thought. And I think he's probably capped on the redraft market from a suspension risk perspective. So I have a couple spots where I have Akers. I'm interested in pursuing an Akers for Kamara Plus type pivot. If that window opens up, that will be something I will strike on, for example. So I think sort of arbing him in that range is something that absolutely right now, especially with some perceived risk, at least recently in the news, warrants exploration. Kamara, I think, is one that we definitely need to sort of sniff around on right now, especially with some of the news. So I'll just give you some trades. Here's a couple of good ones. Again, he's not been traded a lot. So for caveat purposes, Daniel Jones and Cordarrelle Patterson. I mean, that's that's pretty cheap. That's the most recent one. 102 for him. Like, I don't think you need to do that. Mitchell Trubisky and 206 for Kamara. That feels like a total bail job. 102 for Kamara and Jacoby Myers. So, again, all over the place. A first and a second for Alvin Kamara and Zach Ertz and Safe Leagues format. Again, that feels... I hate to tie up future assets like that, but again, it doesn't feel... If you're a contender, that feels like you're turbocharging your team for some late picks there. So some stuff all over the place there in terms of his valuation. Another one here. This is an interesting one. Alvin Kamara and Amari Cooper for Kadarius Toney, 107, and Jameis Winston. So you just think like, all right, take Cooper and Toney, set them aside for a second. Basically trading a rookie wide receiver for and Winston for Kamara. Like that's an interesting upside bet. So and honestly, like if you're in a contending window with good quarterbacks, like if there's a scenario where Winston could be your third or fourth guy, as you keep trying to flush out some depth, those are the deals that you can make from depth, right? Because I don't think... Right, you have to A, pick the receiver right, and Winston's really got to be good, and Kamara's got to be bad for that. I think to really lose that deal, you know, I think it's an interesting bet, and that's why you should continue to try and build from depth at quarterback, for example. So, I've been probably less good at that in startup drafts, but probably better in that in existing leagues, and something I'll have to work on because those trades are a reminder of that. So. All right, so some other ones here in terms of the valuation. So Winston was at quarterback 24 in Dynasty startup drafts, 19 in underdog. So I think that's an interesting one. You start looking at that, like it's probably in a two-year window, feels a little bit underpriced. Kamara 14 in both. Again, I think he's probably undervalued in the redraft market. Ingram is 72. He's 55 in redraft. So again, I would lean towards that. It'd be aggressive. He'd be one of the higher end backups, I think. Maybe the second tier after guys like Madison and Dillon, right? Some guys like that that we think, you know, maybe have starter in the range of outcome. Ingram doesn't, but I think after that, Ingram it feels in a pretty good situation. Wide receiver 44 for Thomas, 38 at underdog. Again, I think if he comes into training camp healthy, that number goes way up. Landry, 64 in Dynasty, 58 in underdog. So again, I some of the efficiencies there, he's pretty good in terms of his efficiency too. Again, 92nd percentile in yards per route run. He was actually targeted, by the way, he was targeted on 24.5% of his routes last year. That's good for 85th percentile. So I don't actually think he fell off that far. So for what that's worth, I think he's actually still pretty good. That's a interesting price point, especially like, for example, if you think Thomas is going to be out, that's a smash price for Landry. Olave, 31 in real draft position, 48 in underdog. Taysom Hill and Troutman both in the 30s in real draft position. Taysom Hill, 27, tight end 27 in underdog, 42nd for Troutman. So nothing super compelling there. Tony Jones is interesting from a deeper perspective, right? If you think there's a shot that maybe Ingram doesn't make the roster, something like that. Tony Jones is an interesting name. Abram Smith is another one that's popped up a bit. But yeah, I mean, overall, I think Kamara's a buy. I think there's a really good chance that one of Thomas and Landry really outperform their ADP. So I think at their cost, like they're appropriate upside plays. I think Thomas in particular is a really good upside play. I think Landry is probably more in like the wide receiver 2-3 range of an upside play, but I think still like if Jarvis Landry was wide receiver 21 this year, like it wouldn't shock me. It really wouldn't, just because that's kind of who he is, and I don't think his numbers fell off that bad. I just think his situation wasn't that great. So that'll pretty much do it here again for a team that frankly is in transition, and the only really surviving healthy guy who hasn't been out or missed time or playing for a different team in the since the prime window of this last 5 years, really, for them is Kamara. And, you know, Thomas has been hurt. Ingram was gone and came back. And, you know, Breeze is gone. Peyton's gone. Kamara's the holdover. And there's uncertainty about him. So I think it's a really interesting team. And I like the upside bet for Kamara. I think he has running back one overall in his range of outcomes. So that'll do it for this episode. And until next time, continue embracing the variance. We'll talk again very soon.